This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski on 104.5 The Zone.
About that time. Preds and Coyotes today, 1:30. We're watching it live at Scoreboard Bar and Grill. We're broadcasting live from here, 2408 Music Valley Drive. The crew, alongside Chad Withrow and Paul Kuharski, I'm Jonathan Hutton. Kirby Allen Kirby is here, making the show happen for us on location. David Reed is the chairman of the board back at our studios in Nashville. We are queued up by Edley's Barbecue. You can download the Edley's app to see the full menu, which I'm looking at right now. Chad, would you be going to Edley's or Poncho and Lefty's today for lunch?
Let's go Poncho and Lefty's today, Hutton.
You can choose from the just chips and queso, the burrito bowl, the avocado bowl, or I'll throw in the cheeseburger taco.
Cheeseburger Ooh, that sounds pretty good. I'm going to go cheeseburger taco. You've yet to give me that option.
It's the flour tortilla with black bean spread wrapped around a crunchy corn tortilla with seasoned beef, peppers, queso, lettuce, crispy onions, pico de gallo, and more.
I don't think Hutton would be having that. And I need to circle back to this. I think the most controversial thing that's been said on our airways in the last week or 10 days was Chad having the salad that day. That was hugely controversial.
Big moment in show history.
He went with the, was it the Southern salad at Edley's or was it the Cantina salad at Poncho?
Doesn't matter.
It was
the
Southern salad at
Edley's. Yeah, that's good. That's legit.
I'm not denying that it's a good salad.
That's a legit salad.
Me picking the salad was shocking.
This is the softening of Chad. We talk so much about my softening. That's Chad's softening.
But see, not eating the salad physically could be leading
physically,
to the softening.
The hardening.
So maybe the salad is the actual hardening physically.
Of the body, of
the physical
but not
hardening.
Of the spirit.
The physical hardening, the spiritual softening.
We will also not be having a
T-shirt.
Seafood boil today.
Apparently I made that up. Check the tape. Listen to the promo.
Hey, man,
the zone's been running.
I trust you. Apparently it's our fault.
It says something about a seafood boil for $20.
We apologize.
If not, I just completely made that up.
You could come back
on Saturday,
apparently.
This is like when I announced that Ozark was coming back on a Friday and it was 3 months away.
Apparently you could come back on Saturday for a delicious seafood boil.
I can tell you something. If they don't have it, like, then they do. But if they didn't have it and they heard the response to this, they're like,
they should have.
That's right. We're going to have this.
Right. I was fired up for seafood boil. I was thinking about taking some home to Simon and Teresa.
Someone better be driving up from Gulf Shores right now if they saw the overwhelming response to the seafood boil.
They're flying the plane up with the crawfish.
I mean, I thought about just bringing some newspaper, just lay it out, just pour it on here. Let's go. Pour it on the table.
Lots
yeah, no
of other
seafood
good
boil
food.
Today. We got oysters today, though.
A lot of other good
two for one drinks
options.
As well.
That's the most important part. Two for one drinks.
Scoreboard Bar and Grill, 2408 Music Valley Drive. So
we forgot how to do remotes. We've been away.
I know.
For a while.
I know. They just opened, by the way, at 11 a.m. Toby Standifer and a member of Your All 22,
Sam.
Sam is here. They got in early.
Good old Sam. Sam is the high energy guy in the 22 group. He's like the alarm.
More than Catfish Jake?
Oh, yeah. Sam is like a wake everybody up guy. Like if you had a buzzer set on your GroupMe text app.
He's a smack in the face?
Oh, yeah. He's a smack in the face. He's a
nice.
Good morning, everyone. I've got a list here of the top 25 cities for newly remote workers. Are you curious where Nashville? It's a BS list.
Top 25?
Yeah. Nashville's on it.
I'll say top 10.
No.
So 25th?
20 on the nose. behind us are Buffalo, Greensboro, North Carolina, Henderson, Nevada, Richmond, and Cleveland. But Kansas City, Missouri is allegedly the best city for a new remote worker, with Milwaukee, Lubbock, Philadelphia, and San Antonio behind us. Part of its cost of living, Wi-Fi speed, delivery options, parks per capita, proximity to a major airport, and affordable 3-plus bedroom homes on the market.
I'll take their word for it on that. I'm not leaving.
These lists are so stupid at times.
The wallet
Wichita, Kansas. We couldn't edge out Wichita, Kansas, which came in 19.
Well, there's all these fake ones. I think Barstool Sports puts them out. It's like
they
the map of the country.
Yeah. In-N-Out like, Burger is the most popular
the
burger.
Favorite candy. Yeah, it's
in Tennessee, despite the fact that it's 900 miles to the closest In-N-Out Burger.
Well, people get outraged by it when they see it.
Yeah, it's fake outrage. Real outrage at fake information.
Preds today, we know they have to be better, but who? I'm looking for Johansson, Duchesne, Ellis. We need to see those guys. We need to notice them.
Big-name guys.
No, we need to notice them.
Duchesne, like don't draw the – first off, I want him to not make dumb mistakes. Duchesne, don't draw the penalty.
Right.
Forsberg, don't turn the puck over to a shorthanded goal on a power play. All right, let's start there. Eliminate those mistakes and play even, and you should be in a much better position. That's the first thing you need, right?
Yeah, that's I'm looking more for – you want the stars to play like stars in the playoffs, but – more than that, I'm looking for just minimizing mistakes. I mean, going on the penalty kill six times in game one, especially when you're trying to come from behind, was an absolute killer to the Preds, constantly being shorthanded. So that's the biggest thing I'm looking for. Two things. Urgency, like you saw in the third period on Sunday, to start the game, and then not putting yourself behind the eight ball with penalties. Two biggest things for me in this game.
We just heard from Chris Mason, who was saying, you know, if it's Saros again, he's deserving of it. Pekka would be chomping at the bit. He's playing both sides, but he knows. Saros needs to be the guy that starts today. It's UC Saros. There is no goaltender controversy.
It's a matter of workload. If you're dealing with back-to-backs and if things stack up, I would think he plays this whole series. Then if you get into seven-game series and things are stacked up in a tougher way, maybe you see Pekka because of the workload. I don't know.
Well, Poyle has told us we're going to see both.
Okay, so that's the circumstance under which I'd say you see both, or you see him come in if they're blowing somebody out or they're getting blown out.
Right. I thought it was a sign from Hines that they get down 3-0, albeit not all on Saros.
I didn't expect to change for a second there.
Well, Peter Laviolette would have pulled Pekka Rinne in a heartbeat in that situation.
Well, with those same goals, I wouldn't have done anything. Either
Pekka Rinne falls
way.
Down 3-0 there in the first period. We're seeing Saros come in.
With Laviolette, yeah.
And, well, to me, there's only a controversy if Saros is bad.
Right.
There should be no controversy unless UC Saros comes out and it's bad at any moment. Then suddenly you've got a decision to make.
Here's my hockey thing. Chad was saying...
But there should be no decision to be made going into this game.
I agree.
Chad was saying yesterday, and I think it's a reasonable argument that he makes, that he wants more certainty, you know, with the seeds, even though you spelled out, Hutt, that the seeding isn't based on that many different games.
I want to feel like there's actually an upset. Right.
There's a four-point difference between Arizona and Nashville.
But here's what I wish was different. Every time, win or lose, when we go to the keys to the game, what are they? They're always the same, right? They lost. What do they need to do? Play smarter, stay out of the box, show more jump, right?
Right.
Conceivably better goaltending, take advantage of your opportunities more, right? They're going to put up, you know, I guess Crispy's not involved in this broadcast, or is he?
No.
You know, they'll put up whoever's keys to the game. You're always picked from the same six keys to the game. Three of the keys are from the same six keys. Get the healthy, if you're injured, get the healthy, get the guys back in healthy. Puck possession. You know, it's a very limited buffet. Buffet is going to be a word our kids don't know, Chad. But it's a very limited buffet from which you choose what needs to change in a hockey. If you lose, you need to possess the puck more. You need to play smarter. You need to stay out of the box, right? If you win, you need to maintain the jump, continue to hold on to the puck, continue to stay out of the box, right? How much variance is there in the keys to the game?
Not a lot of variance, Paul. You're right. It's a very similar. Can I quickly share with you guys why I'm in mourning today?
Yeah.
Mike Soroka. For the Braves last night.
God, one guy goes down, the whole season's over for the Braves.
It's
How about
a big,
some depth?
It's a big loss. They don't have much depth because of injuries and because of some other reasons in that pitching rotation. It's very average. Their pitching rotation now is very average. And Mike Soroka as the ace was
very
a guy they
man.
Were...
He looks like Joffrey.
He does look like Joffrey. He moved like Joffrey on that play, too.
It's a very awkward
Claire
play.
Claire pointed that out last night. She's like, did the guy who got hurt, is that Joffrey?
Joffrey
like,
from what?
Like, he from Game of Thrones. He looks just like him.
He does. That was a bad-looking injury. And just a freak planted on his right foot trying to go to the move towards first base, and his Achilles just completely went out.
This is like Simon sometimes when he gets hurt, like he sits and goes, ow. Like he bumps his elbow. I'm like, you got hurt sitting?
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. Bad news for the Braves. But it's not. I immediately got a text from Will Bowling and said, season's over.
Yeah, he tweeted that. I'm like, I wanted to tweet back, but I'm tired of engaging him on the Braves. Like, have some depth. Have some fortitude. Continue on. Forge ahead.
Yeah, they need,
Yankees lost half their lineup last year.
They
continued
need
to play.
Newcomb or Touki Toussaint or a guy like that to really step up at this point. That's what they need. Because you're not going to go make a trade for someone in a 60-game season. I think in normal circumstances, you'd give up a few prospects to go get a great pitcher on a non-contender. You're not doing that in a 60-game season when you're already 10 games into it.
Yeah, and who's a
non-contender? They're already a sixth of the way through the season right now.
Who's a non-contender also is hard to define.
Right.
Coming up, Nashville History in 30 Minutes with historian David Ewing, where today's topic ties in with the Preds. We'll go into the history of the Dixie Flyers next. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
Get more content from Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski on the 180 at 6. Tonight from 6 to 7 p.m. on 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Today, live from Scoreboard Bar and Grill. If you're in the area, 2408 Music Valley Drive. Swing by, watch the Preds take on the Coyotes. 1:30 face-off, and we'll be watching that game as soon as we sign off the air at 2 p.m. It's been a great addition to the show while we've been broadcasting from home and not allowed to, you know, go about the daily show in the way that we're used to. It's been awesome that David Ewing has become part of the daily show on Tuesdays. We're lucky to have him join us for Nashville History in 30 Minutes, and you can hear his various chats on historical landmarks throughout the city, conversations. Our very first one was on Lower Broadway. Then we went to Printer's Alley, Hat Show Print Shop, the Ryman, a three-part series on the Ryman, and much more. You can listen on our podcast page, 180 On Demand, midday180.com. Today, our topic, we will tie in playoff hockey, and we will learn the history of hockey in our city as it started way before the Preds came to town. David, welcome back. Good to see you.
Great to be here, Hutton. I wish I was with you at the Scoreboard. Great hot chicken out there, and I know the Hobbs family has been very involved in the Music Valley Drive area. Love John A's and love, of course, the Nashville Palace, too.
We're certainly missing you out here. I know you were on the fence 50-50 on if your schedule would allow it. By the way, you can check out David on Instagram at the Nashville I Wish I Knew. David, today let's tie in hockey with the Dixie Flyers. From the Flyers to the Preds, hockey in Nashville is no new thing. And the Preds actually paid tribute to the Flyers when they wore the style of jersey that they chose to wear in the Winter Classic earlier this year. Take us back to the start of the Flyers in Nashville. How did they come about?
Very similar story of the start of the Dixie Flyers to the Nashville Predators. The city had just built a brand new state-of-the-art arena called Municipal Auditorium. It's at about 10,000 people and opened in 1962. And of course, it was for concerts and conventions and rodeos, but the people that built Municipal wanted a sports team of some sort in there. And so in 1962, the Dixie Flyers were started. There was a contest to name this minor league hockey team. And so the NHL had, this was two levels down from the NHL. And that's part, everyone always asks, well, who are the interesting people that went on to greatness? And there are only a handful from the Dixie Flyers, because at the time, unless you're an old school hockey fan, there were only six NHL teams during this era. So there was about 120 players playing hockey, and there wasn't a lot of opportunity for you to rise up because there were so few teams. And so the minor league hockey franchise had a contest to name the team, and a Harpeth Hall student, who's 12 years old from Green Hills, got the successful entry, and she called it the Dixie Flyers. And it was named after, her name was Lynn Todd. She lived in Green Hills. She named it after a very famous train that came from Chicago to Florida that made a stop in Nashville. So if you were going to Atlanta or Chattanooga back then, you took the Dixie Flyer. And so that name was, and for the coming up with the name Dixie Flyer, she got season tickets to the new hockey games. And it's interesting, everyone talks about, you know, Nashville was not known for hockey, obviously. This was the first kind of team to play here. And, you know, the Predators now kind of encourage younger people to play. And we have Ford Ice and a lot of other places where you could play in the area. But back then, Municipal was the only ice in town. And so there was just no other place to play. And when they had their first game in October of 1962, you know, the best seats in the house, rinkside, were $3. I say rinkside because if anyone's been in Municipal Auditorium and know the floor, they didn't have glass to protect you between the fans. So you had rinkside tickets for $3. The other tickets were kind of $2. The end zone tickets were $1, and the balcony seats in Municipal were $1.50. And at the time, you know, it was actually a good time to start a sports team in Nashville. In 1962, the Nashville Vols, the minor league baseball team that played in Sulphur Dell, had just kind of gone out of business. And as the newspapers at the time said, you know, Vanderbilt has not been very good in the SEC in the last few years. And so people were really looking for something to cheer for. And this was it.
So I'm curious about the support of this team, because I remember when the Preds get here, there was this hockey tutorial in Nashville teaching the game to everyone. How was attendance for the Dixie Flyers? And also, what was the knowledge like of the sport of hockey with fans? Or was this simply a novelty to go and watch something different from the North and from Canada, and people that went to the games weren't really into the on-ice product as much as the novelty of the event?
It was very novel, of course. And, of course, you know, Nashvillians, you know, came to it because Municipal was new and the place was new. The very first game that was played that October 27th, had about 5,000 people attending, and our governor Buford Ellington dropped the first puck. And it was interesting. They sadly lost the game 2-0, shut out. And that was their fifth straight loss. They did not get a very auspicious start playing hockey. But Chad, interesting that you mentioned that before the game started, they had a couple things that the Predators have kind of picked up on. One was they had music. The Shriners band played before the game, and Bob Lobertini, a local television personality, was the MC. But before the game started, they had a 7-minute tutorial for the fans to kind of explain the rules of hockey and how everything would work. And I think, you know, it was described at the time, very similar to hockey today, but this is how the newspaper described it back then. It was a fast, rough game, and a free-for-all could break out at any minute. And people just, I think they liked it. You know, you remember when the Predators came to town and they were trying to explain hockey to football fans and racing fans. They said, oh, it's this NASCAR on skates. That's how we used to sell hockey here.
Just picking up on that, the free-for-all line that you used, there, I was reading last night, there was one account where you mentioned that they didn't wear helmets, there wasn't the glass there in between the ice and the fans. There was one account that claimed that they would take their stick and sharpen their sticks with their skate, and then as they're playing, if you just so happen to get slapped in the shin by, you know, a stick, well, that happened to be really sharp, and that's how rough that game was at the time.
No, it was rough and tumble. And I think, you know, since referees were probably pretty new and not very well experienced, you know, people got away with things. And interestingly enough, like I said, there was no glass, but there was no penalty box either. They literally just had a couple chairs up in the audience where Municipal Auditorium was, and that's where you would sit. So much different from the kind of Predators experience at Bridgestone Arena, which we have this beautiful arena and just, you know, lights and sound and action. It was very different.
Nashville History in 30 minutes with David Ewing. His website is NashvilleHistoryOnTour.com.
Was there any competition, David? Was there any consideration of another main tenant for the new building in town? A basketball team, for example, which would have been more conventional? I know you mentioned the novel idea of it and that there was attractiveness in that.
There was not. You know, for I grew up in Nashville, and we'd always used to say, we're the largest sports market with television market without a professional sports team. And that was the case for many, many years until the Predators and the Titans came to town. You know, Municipal at the time kind of replaced the Ryman as the place to play in Nashville, especially since it sat close to 10,000 people. And you had everyone from Elvis to the Jackson 5 to the Rolling Stones play there during that time. But you know, they also, it was built really for a convention center, even though they didn't really call it that. So there were a lot of civic conventions in the area that now the Musicians Hall of Fame is in the basement. That was really meant for conventions.
Pretty distinctive uniform that we mentioned the Preds kind of paid tribute to at their outdoor game in Dallas. What is there a story behind how they came up with those sweaters?
They said at the time, so the colors of the Dixie Flyers were purple, gold, and white. And the jersey was gold and kind of very similar to the gold that we now are used to seeing, a sea of gold, you know, at Bridgestone Arena when the Predators play. It was that kind of color. And they said at the time they just wanted something that would just really pop and have a big contrast to the white ice. That they just wanted to, since it was new, they just wanted to kind of go all in. And they did.
So, David, they were EHL champions back-to-back in 66 and 67. 51-19-2 in 1967. I can remember the Nashville Sounds in the last 15 years winning a title, but I don't remember it capturing the hearts and minds of the city of Nashville because there were bigger pro sports around. This was the only pro sports game in town at the time. In the 60s, did this capture people's attention in town when they went on a run and won a championship, or was it simply still just a novelty to the city?
I think it was just a novelty to the city. And you have to think that, you know, back then we really didn't, we were just getting into the Super Bowl era. You know, a real championship in sports was a World Series. And, you know, everyone talks, probably the best kind of figure related to the Dixie Flyers was a former player named John McClellan. And John McClellan played at the Dixie Flyers, and he was Canadian, from 1962 to 1964, during their years they weren't that good. And then he decided to coach the Dixie Flyers. It was Coach McClellan that won the Eastern Hockey League championship in 1965 and 66. In 65, they beat the Long Island Ducks, familiar hockey name. And in 1966, they beat the New Jersey Devils, another familiar hockey name in the minor league world. But McClellan went on, after he won two back-to-back championships, he left to join, to go back to the Toronto Maple Leafs organization and coach the Tulsa Oilers, which was their minor league hockey team. And then after the Maple Leafs fired their coach, Punch Imlek, he became the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs and was actually the NHL Coach of the Year in 1971 with only a 33-31-14 record, and lost, the Maple Leafs lost to the quarterfinals to Boston 4-1 that year. So he, Coach McClellan, was really the kind of driving force behind the championships and the success of the team.
We're discussing the history of the Dixie Flyers with David Ewing on the Midday 180. Where are those trophies now? Are they on display at the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, or are they somewhere else?
Good question. I've never seen the trophies. I mean, you would have thought that even if you win a minor league sports trophy, that you would get some significant trophy. The Flyers were locally owned by some individuals, and kind of what did them in 1970, there was a strike in the Eastern Hockey League, and all 14 players struck, and basically they were fired by the league and the team, and then the league just kind of collapsed, and the team just went away.
So the league collapsed. The team just didn't leave the league. So it was just dissolved at that.
Well, the team went first, and then I think shortly thereafter the league folded.
There were more than one, if I'm not mistaken, teams that played at Municipal between 71 and the Predators. Can you run us through that? What do you know about those teams? I can't even remember the one that I went
to
see.
The Knights was one of them, right?
I think it was the Knights. And they were hyped up for the fights, really. That's why you went.
I remember the Knights as a kid, and it was you went on a Saturday night to watch someone get beat up. That's why you went to that game.
And they had the rock and roll music, and it was just charged, and you just went there, and it was like, yes, you went to see a fight, basically. You know, it wasn't necessarily... I don't think they were explaining the rules of hockey like the Dixie Flyers, and they were just, you know, going there. It was just kind of, you know, the Dixie Flyers had a bunch of people from Canada and other people that truly wanted to play hockey. And I'm sure some of the people in the Knights wanted to play hockey, but some of the people they just probably found, and they were never going to be any sort of major league or hockey players. They just, you know, thought it was a fun sport.
The Municipal was the venue, the arena, for a good stretch there. I know we didn't talk about this, but a lot of huge acts performed there. I'm just wondering off the top of your head if you could run us through some of the big events that Municipal housed beyond this home hockey team. And I know they've got some pretty impressive ticket stubs on the walls, blown up on the walls as art in the concourses and in the bowels of that arena, including a Springsteen one that I always pay attention to when I'm there.
No, everyone played. My first concert I ever went to, my mother took me to the Jackson 5. I was in the first row of the Jackson 5 at Municipal Auditorium, but everyone from the 60s, 70s, and even 80s played there. I remember seeing Lionel Richie and Tina Turner play there. Neil Diamond played there. James Taylor played there. You know, the Eagles, the Rolling Stones. Like I said, Elvis was in the building. It was just truly a great concert venue. And back then, as you know, remember, Paul, I mean, concert tickets might have been $5, $10, $15. So you could see all these great performers in a you know, fairly small venue, and there were some really good shows at Municipal.
David, as we wrap up our thoughts on the Dixie Flyers, so pro athletes now that come to town tend to stick around after their career. Did some of the Canadians who were playing for the Flyers end up becoming prominent businessmen in the area? Did they own a local bar? Or did they open up anything like that around town that's notable?
One of the former players stuck around and opened up a sports bar called the Penalty Box. But, you know, I think back then, you know, people were just trying to chase. You weren't making a lot of money playing hockey. You know, they pay them $150 a week. That's it. And for 13 player roster. So I think people just kind of moved on. And Nashville, to be honest with you, wasn't the same city it is today, that people would have wanted to stay here. You know, all these Titans and Predators, even after they retire, some want to stay here, which is great.
Follow David on Instagram at the Nashville I Wish I Knew. I was looking at it earlier today. Explain what you've posted, and we'll send some more listeners there who are not already following you. You do have some old vintage photos.
Yes, it's like a little Nashville history museum. Sadly, there are a lot of these images that, you know, are not well known or shared. I did post a picture of the Dixie Flyers from 1964, and you could see Municipal Auditorium and how close the fans were, and just no glass at all. And I'm sure the ice was not the kind of ice that technology that we have today and the great Zambonis and the, you know, it was probably just put out there maybe twice a game. They fixed it up and then you just had to deal with it. But if you go to Nashville, I wish I knew, you'll find lots of memories of Nashville, of restaurants and businesses and buildings. It's just everything. If you like Nashville, grew up here, or if you want to know more about our city.
David Ewing, again, at the Nashville I Wish I Knew and NashvilleHistoryOnTour.com. David, always appreciate this. We always learn something new each week with you. It's been fantastic. Can't wait for next week.
Thank you, and go Preds. We have a real Major League Hockey team here, and we're lucky to have them, and please continue to support them.
Hey, we've been waiting on local sports to return. We can't have them leave a week after entering their tournament, right? We need this to keep going a little while.
This should be our year. Let's go Preds.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Appreciate it. David Ewing, always great.
Always fun for sure. We're broadcasting from Scoreboard Bar and Grill. Come on out. We got a Preds watch party. Speaking of the Preds, as David just talked about, 2-for-1 drinks. They've got oysters. They've got great food. We're about to order food. As soon as Kirby can find us a waitress or a server, we'll be doing that. And come on out. We're going to be here all afternoon watching the game. Plenty of TVs. You're outside, open air. Great spot to come watch the game.
We have shirts that we're handing out. We also have some bobbleheads. Paul, you said this would be a draw, the Duchesne bobbleheads.
People love bobbleheads. So I think we've got 4 of them. We'd give away 2 today, 2 tomorrow.
Yeah, sure. You make the rules.
Well,
declare it.
But I'll say this. We'll give out 2 bobbleheads. If he draws a stupid penalty, we'll take him back.
Coming up, phone lines available, 615-737-1045, our number, 737-1045. We'll hit some headlines. We'll discuss some Titans and Preds with you next. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
This is your home for Titans football.
Touchdown, Titans! Titans, yes, yes! What a play!
104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. We are live at the Scoreboard Bar and Grill. 1:30, Preds and Coyotes. Got some listeners and friends of the show filing in for lunch.
A table of gentlemen that just rolled in right now with a bucket of beer in front of them. That is what we like to see.
2-for-1.
Absolutely. 2-for-1 all day. Great specials. Oysters.
Spread out, boys.
Hey, speaking of spread out, the menu is spread out. They've got a lot of selections on this menu at Scoreboard Bar and Grill. Really, whatever you want. They've got barbecue covered. They've got pizza. Lots of different sandwich options. Hot chicken. Chicken wings. I considered the chicken wings. But as I've said before, you really got to get in that specific mood for chicken wings.
You got to go elbow deep to eat chicken wings.
I will preview tomorrow and say I'm probably getting the wings tomorrow. And go ahead and forecast. That's going to be my feeling. But plenty of things to choose from here on the menu.
24 hours out, we're getting a report on what Chevo
eats. I feel like I'm feeling chicken wings tomorrow, boys.
I checked in with Brad Willis, our former program director, who's now director of the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame. I'm sure it's a stronger title than director. He's the bigwig over there. He said it does not appear that they have the championship trophies from the Dixie Flyers. I'm feeling like maybe the Predators have them, and they could be on display somewhere in Bridgestone Arena. But if anybody knows tweet us.
I'll send a text to someone who would know with the Preds right now. We'll find out.
We're now curious about this, having had that conversation with David Ewing about that team.
I really like, just like how we secured the Jason Wolf banner.
We want one of those
trophies. Like the idea of us securing one of the championship
and
trophies.
And parading it around.
And when we have a Preds watch party for our show, instead of, you know, other official places, we'll have the Stanley Cup where you can pose with it. We bring the 1966 or 67 EHL championship trophy out and people can pose for pictures with it.
What if the Preds won the Stanley Cup and during the parade we carried
the EHL trophy? And we're in tears the whole time walking around. It's been 55 years.
A vengeance is ours.
It's back. Finally. It's been 50, How great would that 60
be?
Years.
That would be a funny, as Kirby calls it, stick.
Funny
we
stick.
We finally brought a trophy back to Nashville.
Hockey trophy lives. Everybody says the Stanley Cup is the most meaningful trophy in sports, but we bring you the Dixie Flyers championship trophy.
I see something being as small as like Aladdin's lamp.
Yeah, right.
That's the trophy. We're just racing above our head the whole
cup.
Time.
The little teacup, but we build a huge...
It's a gravy boat.
Yeah, but we build a huge base for it.
We display it on a Lazy Susan.
No, what, if it's small, though, if it's small, we get somebody to build a monstrous base for it, and we turn it into something gigantic. Bigger, we get the Stanley Cup proportions, and we make it an inch bigger than the Stanley Cup. I think we could have a lot of fun with this if we could find it.
Anything is possible. Oh, that'd be great. All we need to find a surviving member of the team also.
Oh, there are a lot of them around.
I'm sure, but I'm saying we need to meet one to parade them around.
Have him be our honorary
our mascot.
Yeah.
There was a gentleman who
I love this idea.
Who still lives here, a Canadian that moved here for the team and then stuck around.
Yeah.
And he was telling the story of, I know, I act like that's some novel idea. I'm sure then it was. Yeah. It was weird. He's the one who told the story of taking the stick, and you would sharpen your stick. The point of your stick on your skate, and then you know you give someone a shiv.
We need to reopen.
These guys banged out.
Yes, they did.
We need to reopen the penalty box and have that be our broadcast studio.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
You hear what I'm saying?
And then we can have this guy be the bartender every day, tell stories.
I'm talking with someone who has been with the team for over a decade with the Preds. They say they've never seen these trophies.
The hunt is on.
So he goes, if I haven't seen them, chances are we don't have them.
All right. We got to find that. The mission is on. We want to know. What was the league?
I'm tweeting it out right now.
The EC.
The EHL.
EHL.
Eastern Hockey League.
Eastern Hockey League, 66 and 67 championship trophies. Must be found.
So I'm kind of at that age where I don't remember things all that well. And sometimes I make things up like Chad and the seafood boil at scoreboard today.
But the new standard for made-up stuff.
I want to say that it...
By the way, Ozark dropped tonight also, guys. I don't know if you knew that. It's a quick third season coming back. Fourth season.
So during the Predators run in 2017, there was a feature article somewhere on the internet about the Dixie Flyers, and there was a player that was still here in town, and I want to say there was a photo of him in present day with a trophy of some sorts.
Scavenger hunt is on.
But then you put that in your Google machine and lose the rest of your afternoon.
Okay.
We will.
Yeah. I'm not watching the Preds anymore. I'm digging for that. I'm also, the Hockey Hall of Fame, I'm sure, would have at least one of these, right?
From the league, you're saying?
Yes.
Yes.
You would think. Like, they'd have a history of hockey.
Sure. Yeah, they've got one of them.
Branch. So we can see what it looks like.
Would it be the Dixie Flyers, though? Like, would it be the team in Nashville?
No. I mean, it'd be a random one. Could be. But
we need that on display like we have a catfish on display at Bridgestone Arena.
Like we don't have an Asian carp.
Exactly.
So here's the tweet. I want you guys to approve it. Where are the Dixie Flyers 1966 and 1967 EHL championship trophies? Possible reward for anyone with information.
I like that. We'll bring them to the Tuesday seafood boil at scoreboard.
Oh, and here's a prediction.
Possible reward.
I haven't
Keep
looked
in
at
mind,
Twitter.
That's very key. Possible reward.
I haven't looked at our mentions yet. I guarantee you someone is upset with Chad because he promoted the seafood boil.
I'm upset with Chad because he promoted the seafood
boil. Yeah, but I'm like genuinely upset where they're going to blame that he has ruined their day. And now he's going to get into a Twitter
Lebowski.
There will be no Twitter spat.
Lebowski.
Anyone that's legitimately concerned about that, there will be no Twitter
spat. I think Lebowski's going to be upset.
Lebowski wasn't going to make it anyways.
No.
He's having furniture delivered to his house. He tweeted to say that he can't make it because he's having furniture delivered.
New home office.
Yeah, apparently.
Big new venture.
apparently IKEA delivers now.
Yeah.
Broadway Sports buying him some microphones as well.
I'd like to see some pictures of this quote unquote furniture.
Robert Foster on Twitter says, "Can we also raise a banner at Bridgestone Arena for the Dixie Flyers championship?" Might as well.
Absolutely. You know who may know is David Poyle. David's going to join us on Thursday.
I don't know that he'd know, but we could roll it out there.
Also, will David join us if they get swept?
He's confirmed. He's joining us. He gave me a thumbs up on the text.
If the season's over?
He's coming on Thursday at 12:15. Hopefully the Preds are still playing.
It'll be an interesting interview if so.
Yeah.
Well, not rooting for that.
Season wrap.
Also, tomorrow at 1 o'clock, Titans quarterback Ryan Tannehill confirmed. He will be on the show at 1 o'clock following Greg Cosell. So jam-packed show. And we are back here tomorrow from Scoreboard Bar and Grill. But we want to see you today. Scoreboard Bar and Grill, game two. Preds, Coyotes.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We've just had a couple roll in also. Getting
business
a spot
is picking
right
up in
front of a television.
Here.
Yeah, Preds jersey on. That is a yellow Preds jersey, by the way, not gold.
As the Dixie Flyers were.
Very yellow. But, yeah, it's going to be a good crowd.
The Come bar out here spot. Is starting to hop a little bit.
Bar is open now. Bar is definitely hopping right now. Ready to go. Fired up. Drink specials, 2-for-1s. Great food. We've ordered. I think we've all ordered, right? Hutton may be saving up for his one meal a day. Kirby also eats one meal a day.
Kirby will have,
does it out of necessity.
Kirby will have the truth, according to Kirby, a bit later.
Let's be clear on these eating habits. Hutton does it by choice. Kirby does it out of necessity.
Midday with Eddie, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. David Reed has headlines next to 104.5 The Zone.